So it's just been great to kind of follow in your footsteps in some ways. It's just that we don't have a building yet. But the Lord knows all those things. When Ned Stevens said asked me to come, he said that there would be interest in some kind of missionary report or a missionary theme. So I thought I would start off with giving you a report of a missionary trip that I took earlier this year. Acts 11:22 says, "Then news of these things came to the ears of the church in Jerusalem, and they sent out Barnabas to go as far as Antioch." The local church should always be interested in missions and should always be interested in hearing how the Lord's work is going in other places, not just locally. We should cast our eyes broad, not just in a small radius, but in a very large radius too. And I don't know, how many people has this chapel sent out as missionaries? Does this chapel have any current missionaries out? Three? We've got your daughter. And we got Dwayne and... Yep. Okay. And so you know what it's like to send out some of your own. And in Moldova, we have a couple that was sent out by Western Wake Bible Chapel, Mark and Christy Ferguson. And they're our first missionaries out from our local assembly, Young Assembly. But they had a need because they bought a building that was going to be their house. And when news came to us that they had a need, that they couldn't find local help, and it's like, will we ever get into a place? They're in this tiny little apartment in Cahul in the south of Moldova. So this is my Timothy. This is Sean Fader, and he is a Mason. He's done masonry work. Well, when the chapel heard of the need over there, he said, "Man, somebody's got to go." Well, I just didn't have time to go. My schedule was very busy this year. I've had a lot of overseas travel. And I said, "Lord, there's no way I can go." I said, "If you want me to go, it's going to have to be your doing in a special way." So on a Thursday night, which is our prayer meeting night at our chapel, because of our facilities and the way we use another church's facilities, and they use it on Wednesday night, so we have prayer meeting on Thursday night. We were praying, and after the men and the women had finished, one of the ladies came to where several of us men were sitting talking after the prayer meeting, and she said, "Can I ask you men a question?" She says, "Is it possible for the assembly to send Jonathan to Moldova?" And I'm like, "What?" And I had shared with the men about how I was praying that, you know, God would just have to do a work. And the assembly decided to send me and Sean over to help them because they heard of this need and they knew that we could do the work, but we just needed the sending. And so it was amazing how God opened that door, and I just took the time, and we flew over, went through Toronto, and then lots of flights, overnight flight to Frankfurt. And, you know, it was like the enemy was trying to stop us all the way. When we got to Frankfurt, well, first of all, when we checked in at Raleigh-Durham, they said, "Well, you know, we can't check your luggage through all the way to Chisinau, Moldova, because Lufthansa that you're flying on does not have an agreement with Air Moldova, which is your last segment. And so you'll have to pick up your luggage in Frankfurt and then recheck in." Well, you know what that means. That means going through customs, immigration, going out, going baggage claim, and then back up and around. Well, our plane was an hour and a half late getting out, and we had an hour and a half layover. And so when we got in, our plane was leaving, and so we missed our plane. So we went through the morass Frankfurt is huge. It's an enormous place. And by the time we got our baggage claim, we went to check in, and there is no Air Moldova. They use somebody else's counter, and when the plane's gone, they disappear. So it's like, oh, well, we're stuck. So I was like, what do we do? And so we go to Lufthansa, and they send us up somewhere, and they get this little Russian girl to kind of help us. And, you know, all along the way, God was planning providential encounters. I had spoken months before down in Bethany Chapel down in Augusta, Georgia, and we'd gone out to lunch with Joyce Baranowski, who does the heart pins. And I had bought a bunch of heart pins from her to use on my trips, and I had used them already on the plane with the flight attendants on the way over. And so here's this little Russian girl, and she'd helped us, and I just bring out the pin. She spoke English, brought out the pin and explained the gospel and gave her the tract with it, and she just lit up. I want to wear it right now, and it was so cool. So God was giving us these providential encounters for witnessing all along the way, on the plane and all along the way. So it turns out, they said, well, we were supposed to get in at 12 o'clock, 12 noon, into Chisinau, and the Fergusons were supposed to meet us, and it's a 4.5-hour drive down to the south of the country. And we weren't there, but we had been able to get an email through the States and back to them that they got the information that we were late. Well, it turns out that they said, well, we can either put you on a flight tomorrow, same flight tomorrow, or we can get you there today, but it'll be sending you to Italy. You got to go to Turin, and then you got to go from Turin on Air Moldova back to Chisinau. You'll get in at 6:30. I said, we'll do it. So we went to Turin in the rain. We flew into Torino, to Turin, Italy, and they told us when we checked in with Lufthansa, they said, we will put your baggage through to Air Moldova in Turin, so don't worry about it. So, but they said, but we can't give you boarding passes. Oh, you have to get them in Turin when you go to check in at the gate. Oh, okay. So we get into Turin, and like we get in on the left side, and we got to go all the way down this whole thing, and then there's more concourses down here. So we're rushing, and we get down there, and it's already time to board. And we have no passes. Because we checked into Germany, we're in the EU. We're in the, like going into the United States, like landing in San Francisco and then you fly over to New York, you're still in. You still got to go out of customs and immigration. So Germany was our entry point. Now Turin is our exit point. So we're going through the concourses and then we're coming up and here's a customs place that's closed, and the next one's closed, and then the last one's barricaded, and you have to get through there to get to your gate. Well, how do you get through here? So we wait, and all of a sudden this real sleepy-looking immigration guy comes and says, what plane are you going on? I said, going on that flight to Moldova. He says, passports, please, and tickets, please. I said, here's the passport. We don't have any board. He says, passports and boarding passes. So we don't have boarding passes. They're supposed to give it to us at the gate. He says, no, you're supposed to have boarding passes. No, we came from another flight. And so he finally gets on the phone. He calls a guy, and it's really complicated. And they're starting to board. He finally stamps us out, gets us through, takes us to the place, and it takes another half an hour, and they hold the plane for us. They can't get the machine to even print a document for us, so they end up writing one by hand. And you know, and I know Italian, so I understand everything they're saying. It was just hilarious. We can't do this. No, we have to write one by hand. We've got to have something to put them on the plane. And they're going back and forth. They finally write us a boarding pass by hand and put us on. But again, we gave the gospel at each point. It was so fun. The Lord delayed us, and we finally get in. We're so tired by that point. We get into Chisinau, and there's Mark Ferguson picked us up, and Unnel and Ruba had come from London to meet us there to also join in on the fun of the work. So being sent on their way by the church, they caused great joy to all the brethren. When we got there, we caused such joy to the Ferguson family as we brought loads or suitcases full of stuff that they needed and things that they didn't need, but we thought they should have. And we took them lots of goodies and lots of smiles. And then we broke bread and fellowshiped with the assembly there at the little village of Zirnesti. And this is a brother from Australia, Matthew Hillier, who heads up a big program there called CMI Aid. And Unnel spoke that Sunday, translated by Danny. And then we had lunch together. And they bus kids in. They have a real big children's program Sunday afternoon. And so we got to speak to them too. And then we decided to go see this house that Mark and Christy bought. So this is the house It is a building, okay? It looks nice, but there's not one straight wall in the whole place. And it's made out of kind of like Egypt bricks, okay? You know, it's like dirt and straw put together and dried. And that's what the bricks are made out of that built this building. And so this is what they look like. If you let the rain get to it, this is a half-finished house, and it just washes away. But their garage was built out of cement block. It's a little better. But it looks nice, but... And he got all kinds of materials ready for us, and a cement mixer. But this is what it was. All it was walls and interior walls, exterior walls, and that's it. There's no kitchen, no bathrooms, nothing. Just some little hanging wires with a light and a switch for each room, and that was it. So it was a huge work, and they wanted to lay it out like this with bedrooms and do a bathroom there. And so we started by doing a septic system and putting in the septic for them. And I had communicated with Mark and told him how to start, and they dug the hole and started the septic tank. And that's as far as he got in several weeks of work, because he's not a mason and he was going slow. So finally, Sean and I got in there and start finishing up and building it all the way up to the top. And so then we put his boys to work coating it to waterproof it, and they sealed it. And then we start putting in the pipes to it. And then we had to cover it over. We used some metal. This is concrete with metal in it, with like rebar in it, that they use for the orchards. And we used it to help us cover that over. And then we poured a cement floor, a 3-inch cement floor with steel over it, and got that finished up. And then they filled it in with dirt after it dried. But in the meantime, we had to get the sewer lines in right and get them all tapered right and everything so that it drained correctly into it, and then over to the other building because they were going to put one in and make the garage and a small apartment too. So we had to go underneath all the foundation walls and then fill it all in. But they also wanted to put in a second bathroom in their bedroom and a door and make a closet. So I put the boys to work chiseling while I used a diamond bit angle grinder and started cutting the cement floor and putting the piping in there to get that going. And then had to re-cement it, of course, and then had to plaster the wall. But we had other people plastering the walls. So this is the backside. This is the master bedroom, and they wanted a door here so they could make a walk-in closet on the other side. And this is the other side here. This is the living room, and we were going to be putting a wall there so that they could do a closet. And that's after we cut the door through, and here we're doing metal framing to do the wall to put in a closet for them. And they had some local help redoing the floors, re-leveling the floors, since they were really out of plumb. And so that's what that looked like. I don't know why that looks so much smaller on there than it does my screen. Had to put in the kitchen, and so ran lines over into the kitchen too. This is for the kitchen sink, putting in plumbing, water. Lots of pipes, because the water system there will heat radiators in each room to heat the house during the winter time. So there were lots of pipes that had to go to different rooms. You can see they had old windows with just panes of glass that were held by little nails. There's not even any caulking or any kind of sealant there. So those had to be replaced. Thankfully, there was a local company that was doing it, and they took them out while we were working and started replacing the windows with the thermopane, so that worked well. But the biggest job was doing this bathroom, and it was the only room in the whole house that did not have a cement floor. And so that was a real godsend, because that's where we needed to put all the plumbing down underground. And we had to dig a 6-foot hole to go down and under the foundation. And so we're working here to go both sides to the kitchen and the master bedroom, come into this room, and then plumb it all. And so I was laying out all the plumbing, getting that going for the shower, toilet, sink, everything, And then once that was done, I poured the floor at the level I wanted it initially with pipes sticking up. And then I had to put in this is to hold the hot water system to heat the floor. It gets so cold there in the wintertime, so they have a heated bathroom floor. And then I had to pour over that, and then everything had to be the level, and then started putting in the shower and building the shower, building the what they call the shower curb there, and then tapering it all down to the drain. And then that's after it got finished. We had 2 weeks there to do all this, and then started the tiling. So starting just getting it all in. I mean, we were just working 10-hour days, 6 days a week, just with all the work we were doing, having to replace. We had to replace this window because that was not included in the package that he had gotten. So we needed that done in the bathroom, so I had to grind that all out and grind the wall down and get the new window in, and then had to fix. You see how we had to put these long nails into that dirt brick to even hold the mortar as we're trying to square up this window and putting the wood there, and then having to plaster and mortar it in and fix the doors too. So we were having to square up all kinds of stuff, fix a lot of things, get it all fixed up just to make it look right. And you see that's after we squared up the three sides. And then tiling up the walls too. So just a lot of work. And then we had to put in the water system too. And it's the fresh water system. They have all these houses have these cellars down underneath them. And you can see how rugged it is. This is just chipped concrete that they use for building the foundation. Just odd pieces of concrete that they've found broken up. And so that's down in the cellar. And so we dug to put in a 6-foot pad down there. And then we had to drill. It took an hour and a half to drill one hole. We had to do two holes, one here and then one over there, to bring the water pipes in down underneath the freeze level of the ground outside. So, and that was with diamond cores to try and get through that hardened concrete to get us through there. Oh, that was an old coal chute, by the way, that they used to use to put coal down in the cellar. But after we did the pad there, then we brought the tank in, and you see some of the pipes sticking out there, right there, from where the water pipes are going to come in. And then this all had to be set up with pumps because the water from the city would come in, fill up the tank, and then it'd be pumped up, pressurized by the pump, and pumped into the house. So there was water to the property, and this was just the valve, and it's about 3.5 feet below the surface, so it's below freeze line. But it was just a dirt hole. It could fill up with water and mud, so we decided, Sean and I decided to go ahead and use some old bricks that we'd taken out of another place, and go ahead and we did all that. We laid all that for them and made it nice and then so they could cover it up and get that right. And then took out this old chimney, and in the middle of the house they actually had a wood stove, and it was in the bricks, in a wall, and he wanted that all out. So we had to take that all out and then pour a new footing there and then start bricking up and doing the wall, redoing it so it could be plastered. But as we did that, the backside got weakened. The guys that were trying to plaster on the other side weakened the wall and said, you know, this wall is not good. It's all cracking. You better redo it. So they made us tear the whole thing out. And then we had to redo that side, too. It's a lot of extra work. And so then the local guys came in and plastered it and leveled it all off and did all the walls. So, and those are the Ferguson kids in the backyard. But we had many opportunities. There's a brother and sister here, this young man here on the right and his sister in the turquoise sweater. They're a brother and sister from Germany that came as missionaries to take care of an orphanage. One's 19 and the other's 22, and they left their home to come take care of 6 kids that are orphans and run a home for orphans. That's quite a sacrifice to say, I'm not going to go to college, but I'm going to serve the Lord. And his and her parents came from Germany, were visiting, and he had grown up, and the father had grown up in Kazakhstan, and he made us this big Kazakh dinner. I don't know if you see on the left there, that big, huge pot of rice and meat and stuff. Big thing. He did it outdoors. But anyway, we finished well. We got the things done that we needed to. And, you know, continuing on with what it says in Philippians 2:19, "But I trust in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you shortly, that I also may be encouraged when I know your state." We had a responsibility to bring news back to the local assembly of what was going on. And they were encouraged by it. But what I really want to say is that as you consider missions in your own life and in the life of the assembly, I want you to remember that it's not just about sending people out or praying for them or supporting them, but it's being willing to be a missionary yourself. There's so many ways to be a missionary. You can be a missionary like we did, because the assembly sends you out to do a project, to do a work. It may be a missionary by going out and witnessing for the Lord where you're at. Yesterday, I had a garage door delivered to me at our house in Apex. And it was very heavy. It's an insulated garage door, 16 foot wide. And the original one that was built in 1980 with the house is just falling apart, and so it's time to put a new one on. Well, because it's insulated and it's a metal one, it's pretty heavy. And the guy had it on top of the truck, and so this African-American guy delivers it, but he needed help, so I helped him. And so we got to talking as we're working in the heat yesterday afternoon. And so I invariably always ask the diagnostic question. I said, "Hey, can I ask you two of life's most important questions? If you were to die today, do you know for sure you're going to heaven?" He says, "Oh, yeah, I know I'm going to heaven." He says, "Yeah, I know I'm going to heaven." And then I asked him the second question. "So if you were to stand at the gate of heaven and God would say to you, 'Why should I let you into my heaven?' What would you say?" He said, "Oh, because man, I'm right and I'm good and I do a lot of good things." So my heart sank, man. I thought he had the right reason on the first, but boy, on the second, I was like, oh. So I said to him, I said, "You know, let me ask you something. Let's say you were over in the Seattle area and you were at the gate of Bill Gates' mansion. You know Bill Gates, oh yeah. So he's throwing a big party, and you want to get into the party. And he's got security guards there on the outside. And you say, 'You know, I've done a lot of good things for Bill Gates. I've been a great evangelist for Microsoft. I've really pumped Windows. In fact, the new Windows 10, I've been talking about it all the time. You know, he ought to let me in.' I said, 'No, where's your ticket?' 'Don't have a ticket.' 'But I like Bill Gates.' 'Need a ticket.' And you go on, you can say all kinds of things, but unless you have the ticket, they won't let you in, right?" He goes, "Right." I said, "So what is God's ticket to get into heaven?" He says, "I don't know. Do you know?" He said, "Do you know?" And he was really hungry. And I said, "Yeah, I do. Let me tell you about it." And I went into giving the gospel, explaining about the gift. And it was so neat as his heart melted and he just drank it in, and he was so thirsty for the gospel. We need to be ready and prepared, and you need to find a methodology that kind of goes along with your personality to do it. And sometimes it takes preparation. Part of my travels this summer, a couple weeks back, about a month back, I had about 2.5 weeks of travel that took me to France, took me to the Middle East. And, you know, in preparation for that trip, I was doing some preparation because the purpose of stopping in France was to spend 3 days with an 86-year-old woman just to present the gospel to her. I had decided to put that stop in on my way to the Middle East just to see her in fulfillment of a request by her sister, who had passed away, who was a believer. Her sister went to Northridge Bible Chapel in Raleigh. Her name was Colette Petit. And Colette died of cancer last fall. And Colette had prayed for years for her sisters in France, who were atheists, who didn't believe in the Lord. And when Colette was in hospice, Maurice, her sister, came over and we hosted her. Got to know her, began sharing the gospel with her, but didn't get very far. And so, as a promise to Colette, I said I would go back and see her sister and share the gospel. And so I was praying hard, had lots of other people praying, asking the Lord to give guidance, preparation for the trip. I had found some materials that both Ravi Zacharias and the Billy Graham organization use for witnessing in France. It's a site called Connaître Dieu, and it means knowing God in French. They have a lot of good videos, and I was able to download the presentation of the gospel, God's love letter. And then the most impacting were seven different testimonies by different French people from different backgrounds. A Muslim that was saved, a drug addict that was saved, a person that was abused that was saved, lots of different situations, amazing. A person who was going to commit suicide and was saved. And so the Lord gave me the material to take, and I prepared for it, and a lot of prayer. And wouldn't you know, there was obstacles all the way, but the other thing was I was going to the Middle East, so I was preparing for the Middle East too, and I was preparing for encountering Muslims. And it was amazing. My whole trip, God put me beside Muslims. I was absolutely amazed. I'll finish the story with France first. So I get to France. I was supposed to get there. I got there at 5:40 in the morning on a Wednesday morning, and I was staying until Saturday morning. I was leaving a Saturday morning to go to Dubai out of Paris. And so it turns out that when I got in, my luggage didn't show up at the carousel. And I mean, my luggage was full of things for our children in the Middle East. And I had gifts for her too, for Maurice and stuff. So I waited an hour and a half, never came. They kept saying, wait, it'll come, never came. So I finally did a baggage claim. And they filled out the lost baggage ticket. And they said, well, you know, the computer says it's here at Charles de Gaulle Airport. We don't know where it is. It says it's here, but it's not there. But we'll get it to you tonight or tomorrow morning. So I gave them the address where I'd be staying, and I left, and I drove down. Well, when I got down there, I'd gotten an Airbnb down there in Orleans, where she lives. And when I went to her house, because I was supposed to be there by noon to have lunch, I got there by 12:30, so I was a little late because I had to sleep on the way down. I was so tired from the overnight trip. Well, showed up with no luggage, and she was like, wow, I hope it comes. So anyway, that began our time and began my saying, you know, God's in control of all these things. He knows what's going on. Well, she wanted us to go places, but she knew we needed to stay by the phone, so we didn't do as much as we could have as far as touring, which was just perfect because then we were able to talk more. So as we went through lots of stuff, she kept repeating the same stuff. You know, I just don't need that. I've been a good person. I've never hurt anybody in my life. You know, I don't need God. And so I kept praying, God, please show me a way to reach this woman. There's got to be something that you can show me. So, my luggage never came. Wednesday night, Thursday morning didn't come. I'm phoning the place. The clean place, and they're not getting it to me, and we're still talking. And so she said that this friend was coming over who wanted to meet me. So when this guy Henry shows up, he's a married man, he's about 82, and he shows up, and when he shows up and comes into the house, because I was there at the house, and as soon as he comes in, it's not the typical kiss of the French, of one cheek and the other cheek. It was on the lips, and it was very, very romantic. I mean, it was like, what is going on here? And so after, you know, chit-chat and talking and everything, and then after he left, I said to her, I said, Maurice, I said, what was that? I said, you said he's a married man. Why were you kissing like you have a relationship with him? Oh, I do. I have a relationship with him. I said, like what? Well, you see, 17 years ago when my husband died, he asked me to be his second wife, and I refused. I said I'd rather just be his mistress. I said, Maurice, I said, does his wife know about this? She said, no. Bingo. God just gave me what I needed. I said, Maurice, you said you'd never hurt anybody. Can you imagine the hurt that you're causing to that woman, to that man's wife? What if your husband had done that to you? And she goes, well, he did. He did it to two secretaries. I said, well, that's no reason. I said, were you hurt? Yeah. I said, well, you're hurting that other woman. She says, what do I have to do? I said, you need to break it off. That is sin. So, you know, here God was giving me examples like, you know, just things like that to hone in. And again, it's witnessing is an active, ongoing process. I mean, you got to stay in tune with the Lord and keep asking the Lord for guidance as you're going on. Because, I mean, it's a battle. And the enemy doesn't want you to make inroads. And you just need God's insight many times to get into people's lives. Well, anyway, so the luggage didn't show up on Wednesday. It didn't show up on Thursday. Thursday night, I'm calling. They said, it'll be there tonight or tomorrow morning. By Friday morning, this is the last day I'm there, it's still not there. By 3 p.m., I still don't have my luggage, and I have no idea where it is. And I am leaving at 9 a.m. the next morning for Dubai. And she is just kind of going crazy and kind of, you know, and I've been praying about it. And the first time I prayed about it, she laughed. Like, you know, you're talking to God about luggage? So yeah, because I was praying at every meal. And I said, you know, Maurice, I said, God knows exactly where that luggage is, and he's going to take care of it. I said, I'm not worried about it. And, you know, she saw I wasn't getting angry or anything. But at 3 p.m., I had gone back and I looked at my lost baggage claim form, and it said that if after 3 days your luggage didn't show up, go on the Air France website and go to a certain site and put in your number. Well, she didn't have wireless, or she didn't have any connectivity. I had to go over to the McDonald's to get on their wireless. So I took my computer and went over to at 3 o'clock. I said, I'm going over to the McDonald's to get on and look this stuff up. I went over to McDonald's and I looked it up. It had all the same information, but there was one line that had a number on it and it had a word, a six-letter word. G-E-O-D-I-S. Geodis. Geodis. And I had been asking these people all along, I said, could you please give me the name of a freight handler, somebody you've given this to so that I can contact them and make sure I get it? They said, we don't have that information. So when I saw this Geodis under this number, the Lord just said, I think, Jonathan, you can conclude that it means geographical distribution. Geodis, which in French would be geodistribution, logical. So I did a Google search, Geodis, Orleans, France, bingo. There was this huge place like a UPS distribution center, and it was like 5 miles away. Mapped it out, drove over there with my car. It was this huge center. It had all these automatic gates closed, but one was open. And it's one of those card things, and there's no personnel there. So I just drove in. It's like half a mile of bays with trucks in front of them. So I went to the left, thinking, well, I'll look down here. And all of a sudden, honk, honk, honk. His truck was honking at me, and his guy's waving. So I turned around and went over there, and he goes, le bureau, c'est là. The office is over there. You got to go down and around the building. So I said, thank you. So I drove down there, went around back, all the way back to the back of this huge place, and there was this little door and said office. So I parked, went in there, explained my story to the woman who was there at the desk, and she said, well, do you have a tracking number? I said, no, I don't have a tracking number. So we need a tracking number. I said, well, they didn't give me one. She said, well, what's your name? I said, Mr. Peck. How do you spell that? P-E-C-K. She puts it in. Oh, Mr. Peck, we have your luggage in the warehouse. It's sitting right out here. She said, the man tried to deliver it yesterday and didn't see your name on the marquee on the building. And I had given them her name. And when I got the luggage and saw the tag on it, it had her name underneath mine. But they only looked at my name, and that's why they didn't deliver it. So if I hadn't gone there, there's no telling where that luggage would have gone. But the Lord just led. So I show up to her apartment with the luggage, and she's just like, how did that happen? And so I told her, and God got the glory. And And so that was the last night, and that last night we went through some final testimonies, and I mean, it was very impacting. You see, she was moved. And she said to me, she says, "Jonathan, tell me, why did you really come?" Because I told her on the phone and everything ahead of time, that's coming to share the Lord with her. But she asked me that. She said, "Why did you really come?" And I started getting emotional. I started crying, weeping. I said, "Maurice, I came because Colette wanted you to know. She loved you so much. She wants you to know the truth about the Lord. She wants you to get saved." And I shared that with her. So she softened, but she did not accept the Lord that night, still praying for her. And, you know, God just gives us these opportunities. Quickly, in the last couple minutes. So when I left Paris and took the flight, the next flight from France, Paris on to Dubai, I'm in the next to last row in the back of the plane, on the right side, two seats, one's vacant next to me. It was great. And right on the very last row with four seats over here was a Saudi Arabian family. He had been studying in California at UC Davis. They had a five-year-old, very disobedient, very unruly, wouldn't sit down. Plane was ready to take off. They were speaking English to him. Kid would not obey. So I leaned out. I go, "You know what, boy? This plane's about ready to take off. And when it takes off, it might throw you and you might hit your head. I think you better sit down." And so he goes over and he sits down. And the parents thank me. You know, thank you. So once we got up in the air, the Saudi guy, the man, says, "Can I come sit next to you?" I said, "Sure." I scooted over. He came, sat next to me. That was the beginning of a five-hour conversation about things of the Lord. As I was able to present, and he was thirsty to hear, as I presented all kinds of truths, and I said, I would ask him a question. I would say, "Your wife is dressed like, I see that you seem to be faithful Muslims, are you?" "Yes, you know, pretty faithful Muslim." I said, "You know the Quran pretty well?" "Yeah, we know the Quran." I said, "Well, tell me something." I said, why did God ask Abraham to sacrifice his son?" The very typical Muslim answer is always to test him. It's always a test. In Islam, everything's a test. I said, "Yeah." I said, "That's true. It was a test. But I want you to go further than that." I said, "What was the purpose of a sacrifice? Was it a totally unknown concept to Abraham, or was it something he knew about that had meaning before that?" And we started going into that. So, man, we started diving into blood sacrifice, remission of sin, I mean, all that stuff. I mean, and I was going gangbusters. It was so fun. You know, I'd ask him, "What is the purpose of paradise?" That's their word for heaven. "What is the purpose of paradise in Islam?" And I would always, you know, I'd point him back. I said, "You know where it says in the Quran, consult the people of the book?" I said, "Who are those people of the book?" And he says, "People that believe in the book." So what's that? "Well, Torah, that's the books of five books of Moses, the Torah. It's the Zabur. It's all the poetry and literature. It's the prophets, the Nabi, and it's the Injil, the gospel." And so I said, "You know, back when Muhammad was alive, and he said, consult the people of the book, and the book must have been reliable back then, right?" "Yeah." I said, "Well, you know, we have documents today that even are older than that time, Muhammad, and it's not been changed since then. And so let me tell you what the holy book says." And I talk about the Bible as the holy book, and I tell him about these things. It was amazing how God opened that door, because I had done some studying, I had done my preparation, and said, God used me. Another flight, an Iranian woman, the Lord put her right next to me. On another one, a Algerian and a Moroccan Muslim, two girls. And just, it was like that the whole time. It was just wonderful. So to encourage you, think about the fact that God calls us to be missionaries, all of us, not foreign missionaries per se, maybe some he's calling that way, but to be missionaries. May this stir you again to think about the fact that souls are lost and going to hell, and you and I are the agents that God wants to use to impact these lives and bring them to the Lord by showing them the way. Paul says in Romans 1:16, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God unto salvation to all who believe." The power. I think that a lot of times that we forget when we're talking with people that God has given us the power towards salvation. The power to speak the words that lead to salvation by introducing that in a conversation. Introducing things of the Lord. It's powerful. Don't be afraid to use it. Don't be ashamed. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. It is the power of God unto salvation to all that believe. Very powerful. Use it. Be a missionary where the Lord has placed you. Let's pray. Father, thank you. Thank you for the great things that you do in our lives as we surrender to you, as we yield to you and say, God, use us as you would, weak as we are, inept as we are. God, thank you that you use us. And so, Lord, I know that each one of us in this room have a myriad of contacts and people that you want to use us to reach and to share the gospel with. And so, God, help us not to be lazy, not to be distracted by the worldliness around us, the cares of the world, but, God, to be passionate, to be free from those things that would encumber us, and help us to be bold in the proclamation of the powerful gospel, of which we are not ashamed. And so, Lord, thank you for this time. Thank you, this group of believers here. Continue to encourage them and lift them up to do your work in these dark days that we live in. We pray this in the precious name of the Lord Jesus Christ.